TFM.
Welcome, Stargazers, to another episode of The Artificial Tango, our dedicated Star Trek Picard podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I really hate to disturb your driving lesson, but it's time for us to record our podcast.
Hold on, Chris. Let me stop. Stop. Oh, that was not good. Okay. Well, I'm here.
All right. Well, don't worry. Agnes beamed you out just in time, just before that impending crash. So you are safe.
I mean, I guess it's a good thing that I stole the car then. So
exactly. And you did it the fun way by breaking the window when you didn't have to. Yes, everyone. We're going to talk about the fourth episode of Star Trek Picard today, Watcher, in which Seven and Raffi go on a wild ride together, but that's not the main topic that we will discuss, although I'm sure we'll mention it.
Would you say, like, come on and take a free ride? Because, I mean, it was free, right? So
they did take a free ride. All right, here's a quick rundown of the story. I have to ask, what kind of ship is the La Serena? It's a ship with a missing man. And while Seven and Raffi search Los Angeles for Rios, Jean-Luc heads to Forward Avenue in search of Guinan, who he believes is the Watcher. Only we find out that isn't the case. She sends Picard to a supervisor, throwing an unexpected yet classic twist into the story. And while all this is happening, the Borg Queen continues to flirt with Agnes back in France. So, Matthew, starting with France and the beginning of the episode, there was one thing I thought was nice and clever and fairly subtle. There's a British retcon here. Our captain, he stood on the bridge of the Enterprise D back in season one of The Next Generation, praising the colors of the French flag, blue, white, and red. Get those colors in the right order. Yet he spoke with a British accent, and that had fans wondering for a long time, is he British? Is he French? What's going on? And then here we finally get an explanation.
Yeah, I thought this was great, Chris. I thought that this was one of the smartest things that they could possibly do, because this is so based in reality.
Right.
You know, yeah. Many people who, with the onset of World War II and the Nazis taking over France, there were many people who migrated to England and stayed there. And so they would have had a French background, and yet their family would have been in Britain. And mm-hmm. So therefore, having Jean-Luc have a more English accent and everything, and obviously by the time he's a kid, they're living in France. The family has the chateau back. And yet, you know, it also makes you wonder then, was his father a British man? Or, mm-hmm. you know, so it was one of those things where it's like they put, it seems like, quite a bit of thought into this, and it is a very small thing, and yet I think it's one of those things to which, when if you're going to try to explain it, it's a very simple and a very perfect explanation yeah. as to why you have a character who has almost more of an affinity for being British than necessarily French.
Yeah, exactly. And they set it up in The Stargazer by giving his mother a British accent in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then they followed it up here with, I thought, a wonderfully natural and believable explanation. Nothing convoluted. And now we know. So now when we watch The Next Generation, we know why he has that accent. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I just wanted to mention that up front, because we've got a lot of other more important stuff to talk about here. And let's go ahead and talk about Guinan. And I want to start there, because we were predicting for a couple of episodes that Guinan would be the Watcher. And it felt like, okay, this part of the story is pretty straightforward. He goes to Forward Avenue. He goes into 10 Forward to the bar. He finds a young Guinan. And then things get a little bit odd, starting with the fact that she doesn't recognize him.
Yeah, I thought that this was really interesting, Chris, and it brought me back to actually, you know, one of the things that Picard says to Agnes when they're at the chateau, because they've gone to the house to get themselves warm because the ship's systems aren't all operational yet, mm-hmm. and therefore the heating isn't. He tells her, because she's like, what's wrong, mister? And he says, nothing, just lost in the past.
Mm-hmm.
He's and I really thought that
things
this
that
was,
haven't happened yet.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Remembering his childhood. But I think that phrase really stuck with me because I think that that is indicative of the entire season of what's happening. They are lost in the past, and that lostness applies to everyone. Like, and so Guinan not recognizing Picard. You know, we get this idea of this aft cleft, I think it's called, aft cleft.
Yeah.
This thing that only affects Alorians when they
sickness.
Realize time is...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think what they're really doing in this at the beginning of the season here is they are giving us a lot of different clues as to what's happening. And it'll be interesting once all the, you know, the puzzle comes together, and hopefully it comes together really well. But like her not recognizing Picard, she doesn't recognize his name. There is this sense that...
Well, she does recognize his name, which is interesting. Because he doesn't reveal his name until the end, almost.
True. She doesn't... But she recognizes his name, not because of what we would think of how she would know
yeah,
him,
exactly.
which is Time Zero.
Right, right.
But because of who this... surveyor is.
Yeah, he's a significant figure in
the supervisor.
Yeah, history, yeah. And so she knows the name. Yeah, it's
exactly.
As if she were. We should talk about this when we get to the Watcher section. But it's as if she, his name is on a list of people that they're supposed to be watching out for. Essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Exactly. And so I thought that was kind of fascinating. And on top of that, you know, Chris, you pointed something out that I thought was really interesting. Which is, Picard and her have the same type of dog.
Oh, yeah. You and I were texting, and I said, you know, Luna's interesting because I think that the dog is also some kind of temporal hint. And not just the fact that they have the same dog, same type of dog, but the dog, Guinan is surprised that the dog is very friendly to Picard, and Picard says, well, that's because... Mm-hmm. She realizes that I'm not a threat. And that's the same thing that he said to Dodge in the first season when she came to him and the dog was friendly as well. And he said, if you were a threat, you know, she would let me know. And so mm-hmm. that little connection too, I thought was a hint that there is something going on. There's some connection still between Picard and Guinan.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
It's also just showing how... some elements or threads of time are mm-hmm. tangled.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with that. And, you know, I also found it interesting because of the speculation about the Watcher, but more specifically, when you said that about Luna, I was thinking about the speculation of who the Watcher is. And I was like, okay, could the dog be akin to, like, Isis with Gary Seven?
Right.
Like, is that... I mean, we're going to go that far with it?
Uh-huh.
So, that... I mean, it's probably not the case. I think you're just more... I think you're more on line with the fact that this has to do with the complete disruption of the temporal timeline,
mm-hmm.
that we are legitimately lost in time. We have... Q is created in a mess.
Yeah.
And Luna is just one of the effects of that.
See,
so
for a second there, I thought you were going to say, could the dog be the Watcher?
I mean, I'm sure he watches things, but no.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, the other thing that really stuck me, obviously, we get Guinan giving this big speech, but there are a couple of things in that speech that really stuck out to me that I thought really bold for them to say, which is she says, truth is whatever you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Facts aren't even facts anymore.
Yeah.
And I was really struck by this because I think it's 100% true, which as she's saying that, yes, it has the social commentary aspect to it,
mm-hmm.
But I was thinking of it on just the deeper level, which is, well, everything's kind of screwed up right now to the sense that Guinan should know who Picard is.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. Like, so facts aren't even facts. Like, there is a little bit of a deeper level, especially mm-hmm. those two lines. As much as I love them with the social commentary, I was like, wow, that's good. So I felt like there's some really great things happening,
yeah.
even just with their communication and what they were saying to each other.
Yeah, I felt like that line from her was meant to be very on the nose, contemporary social mm-hmm. commentary. And it is true. It's very much true in the world these days. Facts are not facts anymore. And that's true regardless of which side of the fence you're on. I mean, you can, mm-hmm. your view yep. of any issue can be from any direction and you're still affected by the fact that yes. facts are not facts anymore. But you make a great point that I'm not positive is what the writers intended, but they very well may have intended it to be in-universe commentary, that things that we think should be true about the in-universe history and the timeline and what characters know isn't necessarily true anymore because of this mess of time.
And what was interesting about that, too, and I love, Picard has some great lines to Guinan here, and in many ways almost channeling her future self. Mm-hmm. But when he tells her that distance offers no protection from time, I love that because this idea is that you you could take this as broad as you want, but even just personally, you cannot run from your problems mm-hmm. because, of course, the saying is, wherever you go, there you are, and you just bring your problems with you. And that's the same all the way up to a societal level. And I just really appreciated that because, again, that was a line to me that was saying something on a social commentary level. It's saying something on a level of the characters themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's working on all these different levels. And so I'm really, this is another place to which I was really impressed with the writing here between Picard and Guinan.
Yeah, definitely. What did you think about young Guinan and the performance of Ito Akihere, the actress? And also kind of where Guinan is in her life in this moment in 2024.
Yeah, I thought this was unexpected, obviously. But I also thought that it made for a really interesting addition to the character and the fact that she has this past of you know, she is not a watcher, but she does seem to have something to do, you know, with these supervisors, mm-hmm. you know, and part of that is because she's an Allurian, right? And she's good at this. And so I thought the performance was great. I mean, to me, she was an incredible actress. She's really putting her heart and soul into the role, even for the one episode that we see her mm-hmm. here, right? And I liked her a lot. And so, and I found her to be, like, she gave a great performance. I mean, when you're going up against Patrick Stewart, mm-hmm. who is so comfortable with this role, and I thought the beauty of this, too, was that, you know, we see Guinan in a place to which the surrounding, her surroundings have had a massive impact on how she thinks. And what's interesting is that we know she's going to become the Guinan in the future, right? Or at least, you know, there's a possibility that mm-hmm. that Guinan will exist. And yet, she almost feels more like a 21st century human
oh, yeah.
in this episode yeah. than she does what we, you know, Picard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was fascinating because what it really led us to is Picard being able to remind her and us that the most terrible points and the most darkest moments in history can be the tipping points, and the fact that change always comes later than we think it should.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. but it doesn't mean it isn't coming and that isn't going to happen. And I think, yeah, all of that together, I thought was fantastic. I really enjoyed the performance, and I'm kind of hoping we'll get to see her again. How did she strike you, Chris? What did you think of everything?
Yeah, I think it was good to cast her. Obviously, I think Whoopi Goldberg would not have been able to play the young Guinan in this situation because it's too far back earlier in Guinan's life. But I felt like the actress had studied Whoopi Goldberg's performances as Guinan because her speech patterns, her inflections, a lot of it really echoed Whoopi Goldberg. And I feel like she did a lot of studying and a lot of preparation for that role, knowing that she's playing an iconic character played by an iconic actress that the fans all know well and love that character and her lines and how she would interact with Picard. And so I thought she did a really nice job of bringing that forth, making it feel like Guinan, but also feel like a younger Guinan. And as for whether we'll see her again, I think probably we will. I don't feel like this is the end of the road for young Guinan in this story, although I'm not sure that she's going to be a central part of the story from here on out. I think her key role was to lead Picard to the Watcher. So let's talk about that, because Guinan tells Picard, "You're looking for a supervisor, otherwise known as a Watcher. They're peppered through the galaxy, assigned to protect the destiny of certain individuals." And we talked about a few moments ago how she doesn't recognize Picard, as you would expect, but she does recognize his name. And when she hears the name Jean-Luc Picard, she's like, "Oh, man. Now I have to deal with this because he's on the list." You know, it's like that. And then she leads him and, you know, they send us on this sort of, they try to throw us off the path of who the Watcher might be by having these people who the Watcher possesses temporarily to lead Picard over. And then we find out that the Watcher is Laris. And I thought,
or at least a version of
Laris. Yeah, which we'll talk about in a moment. But just for the moment, having it be this, you and I have said that whoever the Watcher is has to have a connection to Picard. It has to be someone who Picard will respond to. So it can't be random person that Star Trek fans think would be cool, like Rainn Robinson or something like that. And that's why we thought it was Guinan. And since it wasn't Guinan, of course, Picard has an affinity for Laris. And that was set up in the first episode in the opening scenes where they almost kiss, but they don't. And then Picard leaves and then Laris is wondering where he's going. So I thought that was clever. And you and I, we named the first episode of this podcast, "We'll Always Have Laris," because we, well, first of all, it was a fun play on the TNG episode title. But more importantly, I think we both felt that that wasn't the last that we were going to see of her in this season because it was just too brief. Now, as you said, this is maybe not really Laris because she has human ears. And the way she looks at Picard is a bit different because he says Laris and she gives him this look. And it appears that she is probably from the, she's Aegis. She's the people that Gary Seven is from, because Guinan says that she's a Watcher, but they're also known as supervisors. And in Assignment Earth, Gary Seven was listed as Supervisor 194, and they had different classes, and he was a Class 1 supervisor. And the agents are, like, the purpose of the Aegis is to kind of monitor the timeline and help guide certain people, right? Which is exactly what's going on here. So it seems like she's probably an agent like Gary Seven, and she may not necessarily be Laris. She may just look like Laris. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely can see her being a part of this same organization. that Gary Seven was, and being one of their agents. And I think the idea of her looking like Laris is quite interesting. And what I think that it will, and I think the beauty of that it is going to help us continue to dig into the actual issue of this season, which is uncovering the emotional wounds to which these characters will not grow past, and help them to finally get past those emotional wounds, overcome them, and be able to move on with their lives. Mm-hmm. And so having to do that with somebody who literally looks like the person that he's been unable to kind of let go for, I think is phenomenal. And one, it gives us more time with an incredible actress. And two, it's perfect, like you said, for the storytelling, because this means something to Picard. And this makes it really interesting and really difficult. And bringing in this organization is phenomenal too, because there's so much you can do with them, because we only got one episode of Gary Seven. And now you had other media with books and stuff that went in and did things with him, comics that went and did things with them. But this gives us the opportunity to see how they play into this, especially since we obviously know that time has been completely and royally screwed up mm-hmm. by Q.
Yeah, and you and I, years ago on Literary Treks, we actually discussed that whole Gary Seven comic series that was put out. So if anyone's interested in more Gary Seven, look for that on Literary Treks. I don't remember the show number at this point. But yeah, it seems to me like that's the connection here. The door they go through at the end, it all has this mm-hmm. great connection. But I think yes. you make a wonderful yes. point about if the Watcher looks like Laris but isn't actually Laris, it probably serves its purpose better in forcing Picard to look inside himself, which is, we believe, the point of the story,
mm-hmm.
you know, yes. more so than if it were actually Laris. Now, I was just thinking you could make a leap and say that maybe Laris herself was an agent, a supervisor, a watcher, even in the end of the 24th century, beginning of the 25th century, because she's there on the estate with Picard. It could be like she's keeping an eye on Jean-Luc. He's this important person in history, and she was a Tal Shiar agent. And so who knows? But I don't think that's what was going on, but you could certainly mm-hmm. kind of connect the dots back to that and think, well, maybe, you know, maybe why. But anyway, I thought the reveal was well done. I thought they did a nice job of keeping us on that path of thinking that it was Guinan. And then they did a nice job of not instantly revealing the Laris-looking agent, but having that mm-hmm. kind of bridge in between moving Picard from Guinan to the Watcher. And it was very intriguing for me.
I mean, it was a great ending to the episode, because, you know, you're just kind of, it's that, and then it's the Q reveal, and so mm-hmm. your mouth is just kind of like on the floor, mm-hmm. you know, you're legitimately edging up on your seat, like, what? Because there is a lot that happens here, and I think it's great, because obviously the next episode is episode 5, and it's the midway point of the mm-hmm. season then, and so, you know, you kind of want certain revelations to start coming out here in this part of the season to prime us for, you know, beginning of the end of this season. And what's really fascinating too, I don't know if this means anything, but, you know, I know they filmed season 3 already as well. And I am kind of wondering if does season 2 end on a cliffhanger and they're really kind of telling one big story. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, this story might not actually be resolved, possibly,
yeah,
by the end of the season.
My first reaction to that is, no, I don't think that's what they're doing, because in modern Star Trek, they have these self-contained stories. But they have said that season 3 is a game changer for the franchise, And there are a lot of rumors that they're somehow bringing the timelines and all the story elements back together somehow. And if that is the case, then you may be right that this may not be resolved in season two, because we're already playing with time. We're already playing with all the different histories and the timelines. So, yeah, that is definitely possible.
I mean, because right now we've got a time salad. So.
Yeah, that's right. We got a time salad with all kinds of different dressing on it. It's a huge mess. And we're going to talk about Q a little bit more at the end when we talk about the time situation. But you mentioned the Q reveal, and I mentioned the doorway that Picard and the Watcher go through, and we're not sure where they go yet. But I found it interesting that when we see Q, you know, he's wearing that Europa mission patch on his jacket. And we keep seeing the Europa mission here and there on buildings or buses or all around. And Q is sitting in this little park area outside of a building. And on the building, it says Jackson Roykirk Plaza. And you may remember that Roykirk was the creator of Nomad in the original series episode. And that means Roykirk was like a space pioneer. He was involved in the space program. And so I'm wondering, that's obviously a hint that they put that in there. And then the fact that Q's wearing the Europa mission patch and we're seeing that everywhere, I'm wondering where that's going and if the story is going to move off world at some point, at least for Picard, and we're going to learn something more about what's going on there. I
think it's fascinating because, you know, as Q is sitting there, there's a woman walking towards him who's reading a book.
Yeah.
And it seems like this woman is obviously pivotal to the story, because what he's doing is it's almost like he's Satan whispering in her ear.
Yeah.
And he's telling her that she's going to be fearful. She's going to let the fear and her doubt get the better of her, and that fear and the doubt is not going to allow her to do the thing that she wants to do. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he snaps, and nothing happens. And so I think that is a really interesting thing, because as you're connecting all of these pieces with the Europa mission and the place that they're actually sitting in and all of this, it does seem like that she's actually the key. Like, she's the change. She's, because remember, there's one change, which is interesting because, or maybe she has something to do with it, because they did say they had 3 days.
Yeah,
you know, we have till April 15th, and well, we haven't changed days yet. So, I don't know. That was just a really interesting thing to see with Q trying to have an impact on this person to continue his plan. And yet he can't, because he's impotent.
See,
nothing worse than an impotent Q.
Exactly. It's interesting because I read that scene differently. I'm not sure. You may be right. And as I listen to you explain it, I think, you may be right. But watching it, I felt like the girl herself just happens to be the person who's holding the book. And Q, I felt, was talking out loud to Picard, kind of to himself, to Picard. And he was telling Picard all of these things. He wasn't saying it to the girl. The girl just happened to be walking by and sitting near him. And the book she's reading, it says it's a Dixon Hill mystery. And so you've got that connection to Picard. And then the title of the book is The Pallid Sun, which I think is a reference to a character in the movie 12 Monkeys. So dealing with time again. And I think the book is a hint, and that the girl may just happen to be the person reading the book. Q is talking out loud to Picard himself, and he snapped his fingers just to send himself somewhere else, not the girl. And then he realized that he couldn't go anywhere anymore. That's how I read it.
Yeah.
The first few times through. But it is interesting that, like, we can both take a very different mm-hmm. reading of that scene.
Yeah, I'll be really interested to see how it does play out, because her reaction was one of laughter. And he had snapped right before that. Mm-hmm. So what he's saying seems like we're supposed to have an emotional reaction to her mm-hmm. of all of a sudden this like influx of fear and doubt. Mm-hmm. And when that doesn't happen, mm-hmm. he's like, well, that's unfortunate and unexpected. And so I don't know. I think that's going to be really interesting to kind of see how that ends up playing out.
See, I was thinking that she's reading this book and maybe the moment that like a character. So for Q, he needs to snap his fingers so he can do the next thing he needs to do. And maybe in the story, the character, a similar thing happens and she laughs at the twist in the story. Mm-hmm. And it just coincidentally is the same moment that Q snaps and he can't go. But yeah, who knows? She might be pivotal. It could be that Q, he knows, he says it's unfortunate because he's lost his powers mm-hmm. apparently. And so whatever else needs to be done, or maybe he was planning to be able to save Picard in the end and now he can't because he doesn't have his powers. Maybe that's why he said unfortunate. But mm-hmm. yeah, I once again, they threw us a nice twist there at the very end.
Yeah. Well, and I, on top of that twist, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Chris, is, you know, we get the guy on the bus mm-hmm. with, and I think this has a lot to do with this idea of shattered time mm-hmm. with Kirk Thatcher playing the same character he had in Star Trek IV. Mm-hmm. First, I wanted to ask you how you felt about that insertion. And two, do you think that has something to do with this complete like temporal time sickness that we have, or was that just them winking at the audience?
Yeah, my first reaction to it was a little bit of, ah, that's him, and then that's kind of cheesy, and then maybe that's fine. You know, I kind of had mixed feelings about it. I thought it was fun to bring Kirk Thatcher back and actually have him reprise the role on a bus in California. Yeah, it's a different city, but it's years later, so of course he moved. And mm-hmm. I also thought it was fun that the song is no longer I Hate You, but it's I Still Hate You. And
right.
then there's the social commentary element of him apologizing, just echoing where society is today versus where it was at that time, where today many people are much, much, much more concerned about stepping on other people's toes or offending them in any right. way. So, but I think you're right about, I think it's more than just a cute little Easter egg wink at the voyage home. I think that the fact that there's a similar interaction, but yet it's different, it's a hint that time is all messed up. And I don't think that that itself is something that's going to play out any further in the story, but it's just, mm-hmm. they're just dropping these little hints here and there, showing us how, as I would describe it, time has been shattered. And actually the Borg Queen, you remember, she said, shatter to mend.
Right.
And
yes.
Okay, well, let's just jump down to this part of the outline that we have here to talk about shattered time, because first reaction I had watching Picard and Guinan was, why doesn't Guinan recognize Picard? She should recognize him. They met each other more than 100 years before this, but she doesn't recognize him. And then she mentions to him, I've been on this planet a lot longer than you have. And remember, Picard is, what is he, 100, close to 100 years old, right? And so that made me think that she has been on Earth since Time's Arrow. Like, she was still there, like she was in Time's Arrow, just maybe Picard never went back, and they never met at that point. And so a lot of people, a lot of fans started talking about the whole Guinan thing. And then I've seen a few very complex and very convoluted explanations about what's happening with the timeline and the history. And I think that those explanations that I've seen, at least one of them, I think it makes sense. Like, you can connect all of those dots and say, well, this never happened, so they never went back in time, and therefore this didn't happen, and so forth. But I think it's a really long walk. It's too much to ask the viewer to take that long walk. And I don't think that it reflects what we're seeing in the story, because in the story, they've made it pretty clear that this is one timeline, and there's one thing that happens in 2024 that causes history to change. Therefore, as we've understood time travel in Star Trek in the past, everything prior to that should be the same, although you can say that once time changes, in this case, there's no Stargazer. There's the World Razor, I believe it was called. And therefore, Picard never went back. You know, events that happened before didn't happen. And the same with the guy on the bus. Maybe Kirk and Spock never went back, and so he never encountered Spock on the bus to be pinched. And I'm confusing myself talking about this right now, so I'm going to wrap it up. but my point is that you can create a very complex explanation for all of this stuff. And if you sit down and analyze it all, you can make it make sense in a science fiction context. But what I feel like we're seeing in the story is that some things happen in certain ways and others didn't. And so it feels to me like time has been shattered. And there's a lot of, as you said earlier, we have a time salad. You know, there's like a lot of mess going on, and it may be the result of Q not being able to do what he was trying to do well enough, because there's something wrong with him.
Yeah, to me, the idea of time sickness, and that something is wrong with Q, that Q is sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something is causing him to lose his power. Therefore, the things that he is doing don't have the definitive power in them that they used to have. Mm-hmm. And therefore, in his intention to create, you know, this alternate timeline and all of those type of things, because he's losing his power, what that does is, like we've said, shatter time and create this bowl of time salad where things are mixing and merging and unmixing and merging in ways to which don't really make a lot of sense, because it's become a mess. And there's no rhyme or reason to it necessarily because of that. And I think that's a much easier way to understand what's happening than to try and create any kind of like definitive, you know, like this is that, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, create some kind of timeline type thing. Because I don't think anything that's happening in this episode, even the bus guy, is an accident. I don't think it's just a wink at the camera. Even I personally didn't love it, and I thought it was just not needed.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a reason for them to do it. And that's because so far, everything we've mentioned about the things that they're planting in here seems so intentional that until I'm proven wrong, I'm going to trust that the writers are really on their game in this season. And that they're creating something to which all of this means something. We could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the sense that the season goes the way of season one and just doesn't really come to full cohesion. But we're in episode four, and that, you know, by episode three, it was going off the rails with season one. That hasn't happened yet. And again, I just, all this stuff feels very intentional. And I don't think it's like you can just describe it by creating these plot lines, you know, of timelines and giving an easy, in that type of sense of an easy answer. Mm-hmm. And I think narratively, the idea of lostness, the idea of sickness, all of those things have been introduced to us through the dialogue.
Yeah.
And so I think that makes much more sense, and it's much easier, and it allows you to get away with things as a writer too, mm-hmm. to just go with that as an answer. Yeah.
Well, they've used the actual term time sickness in the dialogue. And so I think time sickness not only describes how Guinan may have felt in that scene, but describes the entire situation that we're seeing, that there's some sort of sickness to time itself that has to be mended somehow.
Yep, I 100% agree with you. 100% agree with
right.
you. And it makes it a lot of fun too, right? Because I think what this does is it keeps so many more doors open yeah. for the writers
right. yep.
than just having like these quote-unquote time travel rules, right? Mm-hmm. This time is completely broken here. So everything is available for them to kind of do and to be able to explain away that way, but also make it, I think, more interesting because you don't want things to be so bound by some kind of time travel convention that we understand. Otherwise, it's easier for us to figure out the story.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay, one other topic to talk about, Agnes and the Borg Queen. And the Borg Queen is, she herself is one reason why I feel like time is shattered, because if you use a complicated explanation of time travel and temporal cause and effect, and this never happened, therefore they didn't exist, so they couldn't go back in time and do this, the Borg Queen, as we see her here, wouldn't quite make sense, because this Borg Queen has stated that, you know, because she comes from a time before whatever happens, she has this more clarity of the timeline. And but what I'm interested in talking about are her interactions with Agnes. These continue to go on. She's very interested in Agnes, and Agnes continues to show unexpected strength in pushing back against the Borg Queen, because the Borg Queen normally at this point would have been able to assimilate someone, but here she's continuing to struggle with Agnes, and I think that's what intrigues her so much about Agnes. What do you think might be the end game of this little tango, artificial tango, that the two of them are doing?
You know, I am really interested in this, and it's interesting just to kind of see the way that the Queen is interacting with Agnes, and to use a term, and I think it's completely legitimate here, and it's very creepy. She is grooming Agnes for something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And in a super, and I do mean this in a super creepy, like as gross as you can get type of way. She wants Agnes, and I don't mean sexually. She wants Agnes for a reason. And I think basically what she wants Agnes for is she is trying to get her to a place where she basically becomes the new Locutus.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
The Locutus that, remember, she wanted Locutus to be the Borg bridge between humanity and the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
And she is wooing Agnes by basically helping her understand that, hey, Borg, we've got the connection you're longing for. You won't have the fear of being seen, because everybody will know how awesome you are. You'll just be able to be as awesome as you want to be, you know? And what's fascinating about this whole idea is that she says the idea that a society and a people that have not lost the terms help and trust are ones just asking to be conquered.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
trust that in particular.
Yes. What the Borg sees them as weakness, right? Mm-hmm. But what have we seen? It is the ability of the Federation to trust one another, to which has allowed them to overcome the Borg time and time again. Mm-hmm. It's their ability to ask for help that's time and time again. And so I think there's this really interesting thematic element happening here of what is ailing specifically Agnes is somebody who is afraid of being seen. She has never felt connected to people. She's never felt loved. She's what's really Agnes's problem, she has never felt known and loved at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Borg Queen is trying to push her to a place where she rejects the need to be known and loved and just to exert her will on everybody the same way the Borg does. Forget trust. Forget mm-hmm. help.
Yeah.
You don't need any of that. So basically making her completely inhuman, ultimately selfish, which is exactly what the Borg are, is yes, they long for perfection at the expense of any kind of individuality. And so all of this together, it's so good. And what they're doing with those two is fascinating. And right now we see Agnes doing a great job of rejecting her, but she's continuing to plant those seeds, and the Borg Queen is going to continue to water those. And I just hope Agnes can make the right decision, because I hate to see this character go down a road to which she could never recover from.
Hmm. Well, here's an idea that I've thought of, and it takes some of what you're saying, because the Borg Queen, tells Agnes, you know, convince me. It's how you convince the collective to follow you, right? And like you said, she's like grooming her and trying to teach her to have this confidence. What if the Borg Queen and the Stargazer who comes through the rift is Agnes? And what if the voices that we hear asking Picard for help are actually humans from the past calling out for Picard to help? And that's what initiates the entire cycle in the first place of this whole story. Because the Borg that come through the rift are not like the Borg that we've seen before. And the Borg Queen doesn't look like the Borg Queen that we've seen before.
I think that's a great thought. Because obviously there is a desire there. And in all honesty, I'd just hate to see Agnes basically become the Borg Queen.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't it be interesting if this whole thing came down to what Picard said in the first episode, which is this has the potential to change the course of history forever,
mm-hmm.
and to put to bed the problem with the Borg through that kind of thing. It's fascinating. So, I mean, I think that's what's so great about this season so far, is there are so many open doors right now, and they're so interesting, and I'm really fascinated to see where they go. And I would say that we've got the other side of the story here we haven't touched on, but we should touch on quickly, with Seven, Rafi, and Rios.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a bad part of the story, but for myself personally, I would say that it's really heavy-handed and it's not very nuanced, and Star Trek should be better than that. I think the same way that, and I'll put it in this category, Deep Space Nine, to which you and I both love, we talk mm-hmm. about in the Orb so frequently because we love that show so much. One of the beauties of that show is the nuance to which it talks about the idea of science and faith and all of these really tough issues through the utmost of nuance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's all the better for it.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think that this part of the story would have been better if they had allowed more nuance to show in the storytelling, other than basically saying, you should feel like this about this.
Right.
That's not great storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. It is heavy-handed. It is not nuanced. It felt to me like a bit more like much older style Star Trek. It felt like original series, maybe some Next Generation style stories. So the fact that they would do this in Star Trek, that they would so clearly discuss a contemporary issue and even come down on one side of it and pretty much tell you how you should feel about what's going on, felt like it's appropriate for Star Trek in when you look at the whole franchise. Even if you look at Deep Space Nine past tense, where we go to the sanctuary districts, which we have seen here in second season of Picard, I feel like that episode is similar in its lack of nuance, its statement of this is terrible, this should never happen. And I feel like echoes of that approach, which was unusual for Deep Space Nine overall, but it did happen in a few situations, I feel echoes of that in the story. So for me, it was fine. For one thing, because a lot of those positions are things that I personally align with. And, you know, the whole immigration issue, I don't live in the U.S., so I cannot comment on what's going on there. But what I can say is that I am an immigrant myself, and I know what it feels like to be an immigrant and an outsider in another country that you call home. And so those topics resonate with me,
sure,
in a way that a lot of people listening to us who don't know my background maybe would be surprised to know, because they don't realize that I'm in that situation, which
sure,
people can't put themselves in, because they see that situation as being locked to people of a certain ethnicity. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
But
I mean, it's interesting too. I mean, for myself, obviously, I'm here because mm-hmm. my great grandparents came here, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, I think the difference here is where there's a lot of nuance to the discussion of immigration as mm-hmm. well as illegal immigration,
right?
And those two yeah. things are totally different,
yeah,
and
right.
therefore not really touching on any of those issues
yeah.
and just making it seem like we're only going to cover this from one way, I do think doesn't really necessarily help the issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even looking back at past tense, what I think is fascinating about that idea now is that the way they portray the Sanctuary District, yeah, that's totally wrong. If that's the way it actually worked with, you know, mm-hmm. the homeless situation we have here in the U.S., especially in the Northwest,
yeah.
which I live in the heart of it, so I can speak to this, I think, pretty well. It's totally different than that situation. Mm-hmm. That's not what that is. So they talk about this idea, but they get it completely wrong there. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the things. It's like, I think whenever you're touching on a subject, it is better to just try and have some balance to the subject matter.
Yeah. In this situation, so, I do think you need to find
exactly.
some balance. So
yeah,
last two
exactly.
points I'll say about this, and then let's move on, is that, well, first of all, I'm not comparing my situation as an immigrant with that of anyone else. I'm not comparing those. I'm merely saying that I have a more personal understanding of it because I am in a situation where I am an outsider
right.
in the culture in which I live. And then the second thing is that I think one reason for portraying it the way they do in this episode and it being kind of one-sided is that the ultimate point is just to show that things are not going well on Earth at this time. And there are
sure,
serious
sure.
problems that need to be addressed. And it's only getting worse if Picard and his team cannot figure out how to mend time. And
right.
so in that
right.
sense, I think that having a one-sided portrayal probably mm-hmm. benefits the story that they're telling in this season, even though it's mm-hmm. not what we would want from a story that was truly focused on mm-hmm. this issue.
Well, and I think you make a really good point. And I'm not sure if you were thinking about this, but just when we talked about the whole idea of shattered time and everything, this doesn't necessarily mean that this reflects perfectly our situation anyway, right? So
yeah, right.
I think that's the place where it'll be interesting to see the way the series goes here this season and what it does for just all of the time stuff, because, you know, you could ameliorate some of this by being able to then watch the season all together and have a lot more of those connections mm-hmm. make sense. So
yeah, sure. And then the other part of this section of the story, just touch on quickly, I loved the whole Seven and Raffi thing. They're like a married couple throughout this whole experience, especially when they're in the car. I don't know about you, Matthew, but I remember when I was married, you know, being in the car driving was the perfect environment for disputes about how one person drives.
Yes.
And the other person doesn't.
It still is.
And I thought that they just played that so well in this episode and all their interactions, even Raffi being so upset that the police didn't have any information and Seven pulling her aside and telling the officer, like, you're doing a great job. Mm-hmm. Thank you for serving. And Raffi great. Says, I hate everything. And Seven says, and you hide it so well. Just the two of them, I think, are at the end of season one, when it looked like they were getting together, I wasn't so sure what I thought about it because it felt like an afterthought and it was just like let's just put these two characters together to end the season. But what they're doing together in this season, I think, is an interesting and a very realistic story of a couple. So I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah, I think that they did a good job with this. And like you said, and, you know, married myself, and there are frequently those times when we're driving where this kind of thing actually happens. Yeah. So yes, it's 100% true that this kind of thing still happens to married people or people in a relationship in general.
Exactly.
I do think I didn't quite get why Seven decided that she needed to drive 100 miles an hour the whole time.
Because she was upset Raffi questioned her abilities to drive.
Yes, but it still didn't make sense. I felt like it was more a plot contrivance than anything else.
Yeah.
But I didn't really have an issue with it. And yeah, I mean, I was actually reliving some of my own driving experiences, my own wife, as watching it. So okay. Yeah, so it was pretty funny.
Quick quiz before we go into final thoughts. What does the yellow light mean, Matthew?
Go faster.
Exactly. All right. What are your final thoughts and what's your rating on this one?
This is a good episode and it continues the trend. So that's fantastic. I do think that for me, this episode is not as good as the other episodes with the things that we mentioned, where we had some frustration specifically in the Seven Raffi Rios storyline. I would still give this, though, 3.5 out of 5 impotent snaps because I thoroughly still enjoyed it. And I think those revelations at the end are the way you want this show to continue, right? You want to continue to kind of like leave people's jaws on the floor as they end an episode and make them wonder what in the world is going to happen next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, I quite enjoyed it and I thought it was better than the previous episode for me. I personally didn't have any issues with the social commentary in the Rios story, other than obviously it's kind of heavy-handed, but again, it aligns with my views pretty well. So for me, it wasn't any kind of issue, and I enjoyed Rios's little revelation that he's the captain of the Stargazer to the officer and the flesh and blood robot that apparently Picard is at this point. But I just thought it was a very interesting episode with plenty of twists and interesting hints. And I'm going to give it 8 creepy little girls in the park, which if I think about it is a pretty creepy rating on its own. But of course, it was almost like a horror movie moment there with those eyes. It really was.
Yeah. It felt like The Shining.
Yeah, exactly.
Come and play with us.
Exactly. And I will admit that at first I thought maybe she was the Watcher and that she was an alien entity, and in some way she had embodied this little girl. So I thought it was quite fun.
I am glad they did not go there.
Yeah, me too. Because it wouldn't make sense for the overall story. Better to have the Laris lookalike. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Watcher and everything that we talked about today and things we didn't get to cover today, because I think we could have done like a 4-hour episode to really talk through this one. There are many ways for you to share your thoughts with us. The best way is to go to the Babel Conference on Facebook. That's our closed listeners group. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right on up. If you're not yet a member, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. We'll put a post there for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with fellow listeners and us there and have a chat about Watcher. You can also send us email if you'd like to. You can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the artificial tango, and that'll come to Matthew and me by email. And you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is trekfm. So hit us up on Twitter or Instagram or wherever, and we'd love to hear from you there. Now, Matthew, when you're not sneaking through that secret door with Picard and the Watcher to find out where they're going, where can people find you?
Well, of course, you could find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. So whether that's Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, any of those type of places, just search for that name and you'll find me. Here on the network, I am on our non-Star Trek related part of the network, the 602 Club. And we talk about all those other fandoms that we're a fan of. And you could find me there. Of course, you can also find bonus shows there with Snyder Cuts as well as Assembling Avengers, which is a lot of fun. So check out all of that in the 602 Club feed. Chris, we also do The Orb together. We mentioned that here where we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We're doing Warp 5 where we've been walking through every single episode of Star Trek Enterprise, which is really cool. In honor of 20 years of that show. So if you don't feel old, I know I do, talking about that idea. And
talk about getting time sickness, Matthew.
Seriously. Oh my gosh. And then Literary Treks, talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, I've got a couple of shows. One is called Owl Post. Talked all about the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, with Drea Kaufman. And then doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, where can everyone check you out?
Well, you can find me sitting at a table in Jackson Roykirk Plaza, where I'll be recording shows here for the network, including, as you mentioned, The Orb, where we talk DS9, Warp 5 with Enterprise. And we just concluded season one, actually, our viewing of season one there on that show. Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time, and I also have Interphase, and I'm on many episodes of many shows in the back catalog, so go check those out if you'd like to hear more of my thoughts on Star Trek. And when I'm not doing that, of course, I'm writing and editing and producing magazines and all that other stuff I do, and I'd love to hear from you about Star Trek or Japan or anything you want to talk about. You can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere in social media, but Twitter is where I am most active. If you would like to help us keep this show and the 602 Club and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. Please visit patreon.com to find out how to get involved in the network. That's patreon.com/trekfm. You can find out everything you need to know there. And things you can do include becoming an associate producer, like Cornelia Rutner, who is our associate producer here on The Artificial Tango. So Cornelia, thank you so much for your help. And thank you to everyone who's supporting the network through Patreon. We would not be able to do this without you. Well, Matthew, I am going to follow you through that mysterious door. And next week, we're going to find out where they went as we talk about the fifth episode of Picard.
Chris, make it so.